Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Tal Yanine. He is the author of Life is Not a Candy Store, It's the Way to the Candy Store. This is a wonderful book about a spiritual guide to the road of life for teens. Tal and I will be discussing about his life's journey and his pursuit to help today's teenagers find enlightenment. Good morning, Tal. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. I'm doing well. It's good to be with you.
Fantastic. I enjoyed reading your book. You certainly have a fresh perspective to offer our teenagers in today's world. The way you weave things from an old philosophy concept, you kind of put a new twist to things that are pretty much timeless. So that's very, very exciting. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, I was born in Israel on a kibbutz 40-some years ago. A kibbutz is a small community where people kind of work together, share everything together. There was no personal property. So you learn from a very early age the value of sharing and helping and assisting others and being helped by others. That's kind of the motto of the kibbutz, that you give as much as you can and you receive what you need. So growing up in that environment was also a very green environment, a small village, mm-hmm. where there was always almost no supervising for the kids. So we got to roam around the kibbutz and the fields and really enjoyed ourselves. And growing up almost carefree. And then I went, like everyone in Israel, when I was 18, finished high school. I was kind of a struggling student. I had dyslexia, but back then nobody knew what it was. So it was really, being in school was my darkest part of growing up, because it was really frustrating. And I had no one to guide me. So I became that troubling, struggling student. Mm-hmm. And later on, like everyone in Israel, I went and served in the military for 3 years, and then I came to the U.S., to Los Angeles, when I was 23. And one of the things that I grew up on a kibbutz as a secular, and because it is a secular society, and I had to come all the way to Los Angeles and become a believer, and really through one event in my life that really changed my life around and gave me a new perspective. And mm-hmm. since then, since age 23, I'm pursuing that spiritual road, realizing that it's really, if I knew more about it when I was a teenager, it would really help me in many, many ways to overcome a lot and overcome my frustration. And that's pretty much my goal today as a father and as a teacher, mm-hmm. is to try and help teenager go through mm-hmm. that difficult period of time, maybe with a new look.
Very interesting. Growing up in the kibbutz, you guys fairly religious. I mean, I'm relating that community concept to, like in America, like the Amish, so to speak. So they're kind of spiritual, but then they do have their beliefs from a religious perspective. So how does that relate to the community that you grew up in?
Well, it's different because those who established the first kibbutz and then the following kibbutzim, we have close to 300 today, I believe, in Israel. Mm-hmm. They came from Eastern Europe, and they were non-believers. Those who left Europe after the Jews lived as a very religious community, but a mm-hmm. very weak community, and they were always kind of slapped around. Every time somebody was upset, they took it on the Jews. And so they wanted to create what they call the new Jew, the Jew that can walk the land and fight. And they left the study rooms, they left the synagogues, and they kind of left all that behind them, and they were secular. And so the kibbutz was established by secular people who were actually anti-religious. So when I grew up, I was not just, it's not that I was a non-religious, a non-believer, I was the anti. And for us, it was a sign of weakness to believe in God, to believe that God exists even.
Interesting. Wow. That's a big switch. So this is very interesting because, I mean, when you talk about Israelis and you're talking about Jewish, you basically talk about the piety, the focus on God in itself. And so you guys were like totally off in a tangent there.
Very much so. And in Israel also, religious and politics here in the U.S., we have two parties. Now we have three parties. But in Israel, in the political system, everyone has its own party. So even the religious people will have their parties in the Knesset, in the parliament.
Yeah.
So the once and then you're talking about money and budgets, and so it's between the left and the right. It's not just who believes in what; it's also who gets the money to do whatever. So it's politics and religion and all that together.
Right.
And it created really an environment of really being anti everything that the old religions, old Judaism presented.
Very interesting. So as a kibbutznik, how did you go about in terms of getting together and assimilate yourself with the surrounding community, or you guys just don't? I mean, you guys just kind of hang out among yourself.
Well, we were separated. You're talking about kibbutzim, which you're looking at 3% of the population in Israel, and we were raised because many of us went to, just by the nature of the community, we were raised that we are the elite of Israel. We served in one point, and again, you're looking at 3% of the population, 50% of the firefighters in the U.S. In the Israeli Air Force were from kibbutzim, special forces. You're looking at 90%. So we were told that we are the kind of the head of the spear, and we looked at people from the city a little bit kind of as a it's a little bit as weak, and you know, it's very similar now when I'm here for almost 20 years in the U.S. 20 years this year. It's very much, I heard in UCLA when I studied there, one of the professors described Israel, the kibbutzim, as the cowboys of the U.S., that kind of a, and I thought it's a good way to look at that. Very, you know, few of them are there, and they are the rugged, and so that's what we believe we were.
When did you know that you need spiritual grounding? Does this happen when you were in the United States, or were you still in the Army because you spent 3 years in the Army?
I didn't really know that I needed it until I came across it. And it was here in the U.S. when I came to the U.S. So I trained dogs I landed in Israel, and then I did it here for a few years. And one of my clients was, she was, I don't know how you would call it today, a psychic. When I was training her dogs, she started to tell me things about myself that I knew she had no way of knowing, and I got curious, and I started to ask her, and at one point I was again young, and I said, I don't believe in all that stuff, and I don't believe in God, and I need the proof to see in my own eyes. And she said, well, maybe you don't need to see it in your eyes, but you can, she didn't know what to tell me. She said, you can ask for, maybe ask God for proof for 30 days and see what happens. And I started to ask, but just before I went to bed, and I didn't share it with anyone. I didn't want to, you know, my friend to think I was nuts. And and what happened that in one point, my friend who introduced me to her, told me that there is a dinner, a Friday dinner, and I was invited, she would be there. And I told him that I couldn't because I had a friend from out of town visiting. So he went there. And the morning after, he called me and he was whispering. And he said, you would not believe what happened. And I never heard him whispering. He was so sure of himself, he never whispered. And he came over and he told me that story, that after the dinner, and talking about 10 people around, and all of a sudden that lady told him, look, I see two spirits who want to talk to you. And their names are Sarah and Hannah. And he was like me, so he said, I don't care. Tell them to page me. He dismissed it. It's nothing. And she insisted, and he didn't want to hear, and she told him, okay, ask your mom about Sarah and Hannah. Now, his father is a Holocaust survivor. He survived Auschwitz, the death camp, and he was sick, so he understood that he didn't want to bother his father with that. So when he came home, he got curious, and he gave a call to his mother in Israel and asked her to move to the next room and ask her who was Sarah and Hannah. And she told him the following story. She told him that his father had four sisters, and they all arrived at Auschwitz at the same time. And Hannah was his younger sister. She was 9, and Sarah was 19. She was the oldest sister. And if you're familiar with Auschwitz and what happened there, as the trains came, they were separated. There was a selection. The German would separate them into two groups, one that would go right away to the death chamber, to the gas chamber, because they were the old and the kids. And those who were considered fit to walk would stand in a different line. So they were separated. Hannah went to the line because she was only 7 or 9, and Sarah went to the line where she would be able to walk. And when Sarah, the older one, realized what is going to happen, she crossed the line and held her sister's hand and went with her to her death so her sister would not die alone. And my friend had no idea, never heard that story before.
Right.
And he came to me, and he was in shock, and he was white, he was pale. And when he left, all of a sudden I realized that was exactly 30 days since I started to ask for a proof of something higher than the daily reality we have. And then I was in shock. I had no words. And that story happened 18 years ago. I still remember it as it happened yesterday.
Wow. And, so you have some sort of epiphany.
And that's what happened from that day on. And I went to that lady, and she didn't know anything of that.
So
when she saw me, she smiled because she knew something went on. I asked her, what happened? And she told me her side of the story. And what she saw. And she saw those two souls that coming together and getting separated, coming together. And then I told her what the story itself. She had no idea, and she kind of laughed. She said, well, the guys upstairs, they have their ways of entering someone's life. After I told her that it's 30 days. And then she continued the story, and what she told me is that when Sarah, where the soul came up from the ashes of Auschwitz, the light in the center of the universe got down to her, when she realized that her love to her sister was stronger than everything on earth, all the darkness on earth, she knew great truth. She knew the ultimate truth. And then the light from the center of the universe came to her, and they became one. She became one with God. And since that day, I said, I had no idea. And I said, that's what I need to explore. I mean, and since then I'm on that quest of exploring that reality that for me is new reality, was a new reality. And my quest also as a teacher, you know, I like to share my stories, and I like to open people's eyes to that reality. And so I'm combining both my love for teaching and my love for spirituality. Actually, in life, it's not a candy store. That's what you get. It's that love for both.
Now, your book is very interesting because it has a wonderful blend of spiritual teachings from diverse gurus and philosophers. So the stories behind it is basically your own personal experience as you encountered when you make this paradigm shift that you sort of found enlightenment And then, of course, it's not the end. It's actually the beginning, because then you start your learning process. Why are you targeting this book towards teenagers?
Well, because I'm a dad, mm-hmm. B is because I'm a teacher, and also because it was something that I didn't have. I didn't have that really that option. My mm-hmm. parents didn't give me the option. I said, look, there's maybe another alternative to your daily struggle. Mm-hmm. If you change your perspective, maybe you will see different things. Maybe you will be able to cope with life, with the changes that you go through. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's kind of the natural group to go to is teenagers, and I could do it even with kids, you know, with younger kids in a different way. I chose, because I'm writing more books, but I chose to start with teenagers. It's because it would be for me the natural way to go.
Do you think teens are open to ideas of exploring spirituality and beliefs in the higher power and so forth?
Well, from my experience, not all of them, but many of them are. And I see it in my classroom, I see it with my kids, and the fact that when you are a teenager, there is so much that is going around, so many things that you experience, so many frustrations, that things that would bring you into the brink of, you know, you say, I cannot take it anymore, that there's so much darkness around you, that so much pain. So when someone comes to you and knock on your shoulders, tap on your shoulder and say, look, here is something, here is, take that piece of light, take that mm-hmm. piece of truth, piece of love, and do with it whatever you will, many of them really open to that idea and say, wow, tell me more. Mm-hmm. Some of them look and say, you know what, maybe, but it's not for me. And some of them would just ignore it. But the idea is that I put, if you sit in my classroom or if you read my book, I put that seed in you of that would open whenever you are ready, whenever your soul is ready to do the to go in that direction, to do that change in your life, you will say, you know, it reminds me, I read once, you know, 10 mm-hmm. years ago, 15 years ago, I read that book, that was interesting. Let me read it again, or let me read another book. Mm-hmm. And so it's that idea that I'm not trying to now convert the whole generation.
Right.
I want to let them be open-minded and to keep it there, and whenever they want to use it, they are free to use it.
What you're saying is very true, though. I mean, we're all teenagers once, and you had mentioned earlier before, as a teenager, we all go through this cycle of we want to know. Inquiry minds want to know, why is this, why is that? If you recall, children, everything, don't do that, why? First question they have is why, or why not in this case. And of course, when you get to a teenager, that why becomes even a bigger why. And so you're very true in terms of that's where the foundation has to be built. Very interesting.
It's true, and that's why I also recommend to other teachers and to parents is not to tell your kids right away, this is my house, those are my rules, you have to follow them, or else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's reality. They live mm-hmm. in your house.
Mm-hmm.
You tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But why not explain to them? If you want to teach them that there is value to work, there's value to money, and you want to, let's say, tell them that if they will do something in the house, they will get a dollar or two a week, or five,
mm-hmm.
or whatever you want to give them.
Yeah.
But instead of them coming to you and say, Dad, give me money. Mom, I need $20. They say,
mm-hmm.
you know what? You are responsible. You take the garbage can every week. I will give you $5. And then
mm-hmm.
when it's your own money, you think twice before you spend it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of telling them, it's your responsibility to take the trash, and that's it, I don't want to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
You explain
mm-hmm.
to them and say, let me teach you a lesson about the value of money, about the value of work, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is. And full
mm-hmm.
talking to them, because they understand. One thing that I was amazed as a teacher at the beginning, they really get it.
Mm-hmm.
They get what, if you talk to them, look them in the eyes and talk to them as grown-ups, they will understand your message. They will not always accept it, which is okay, but they will understand. So before you go and say, this is my house, my rules, you say, here is why I want you to do such and such.
There's a reason behind everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the end, you always can say, you know what, we talked about it enough, now just do that.
Mm-hmm.
But that should not be the first option, because your parents did it to you doesn't mean that's the way it should be from the beginning.
In your experience, is it hard or is it easy for teens to work on their spiritual side?
Well, it really depends, and it's also true for adults. It's always depends where your soul is in, mm-hmm. in its evolution. Mm-hmm. If your soul is just waiting, and your soul brought you to read this book or any other books, if you read now Life It's Not a Candy Store, it's not a coincidence. Your soul brought you to that point, and now you need to decide, is that for me now, or it's not? So if you just drawn to it, and it's come natural to you, then you will flow with it, then you will go with the flow, and then it will be much easier, and then you come across that, you say, I don't care. And then you will not start even. The one thing that for teenagers, it's a little bit kind of out of character, is mm-hmm. that in spirituality, what is required is to go inside. Look for the peace inside of you. Look for happiness inside of you by sitting still, by mm-hmm. looking at things, by observing, by meditating. Whatever it is, it's going inside. There you will find the lasting peace, the lasting happiness. And teenagers, mm-hmm. by nature, they want to explore. They mm-hmm. still think that they will get their happiness from the next party, from the next Nintendo DS they will get, or PlayStation 2. they didn't learn yet that 2 weeks after they got that new game, they are back to square one. They are unhappy. So
right.
This is the conflict where a teenager should learn and say, you know what, let me try that. Let me try staying home instead of running to the next party and smoking and getting high or drinking. Mm-hmm. But let me find it inside, where it will take me. I need to sit still, because it's kind of the concept that sitting still will take you where you want to go. Doesn't make sense many times at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
because you think that you have to do something.
One of the things you talk about in your book, which I thought very interesting, and again, you had just kind of in some ways covered that just now, is desire. And I'm reading this from your book. Desire are not necessarily wrong, but ask yourself, will it take me in the right direction? Or, in this case, will it hurt someone? I think that's very profound, because what happens is that we are all driven by desires. Young, old, adult, children, we want, and like you just mentioned just now, when we get it after a while, that's it, there's no more fire behind it anymore. But in the pursuit of the desire, nothing can stop us. But we have to ask ourselves that question, will it take me in the right direction, or will it hurt someone? That's very, very important.
Yeah, if I would have to write it again, I would say the desire, it's not always wrong. I think the desire is good.
Mm-hmm.
But if
mm-hmm.
it all depends on which direction you are going.
Right.
Again, mm-hmm. if your desire is to achieve, for me, writing this book,
mm-hmm.
there is a fire inside of you. You have an idea. You want to share it. Otherwise, you will not spend the time and the money to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Many people have good ideas, and they say, you know what? I don't need to write. Somebody wrote it before. What do I know about this subject? Why somebody will read? It takes a lot to say, you know what, I'm gonna write, and I'm gonna publish, and I'm gonna say what I have to say, take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of desire to do that. And so desire is a good thing. It's actually a natural thing. That's how we move forward. But if your desire to seek or achieve emotional and spiritual freedom goes to drugs,
mm-hmm.
and you say, because I'm getting high, I feel good, well, after a while you realize that this is not the way to go, and because you wake up the following morning and you feel lousy, and you just spend money. You, in one point, you realize that you're destroying your brain with its alcohol or drugs, whatever it is. And if you're lucky enough, you are not that addicted, you will stop it. But that desire to feel that freedom, it's a natural one when it comes from your soul. It's just that what I'm doing in this book, I'm kind of trying to help you to realize that this desire, that freedom, it's inside of you. It's by finding that higher power and connecting to it. It's that source that would never stop. There is no hangover. You're not waking up in the morning and you feel lousy, because that energy, it's always there, and it doesn't cost anything, and everybody can enjoy it. It's not, there is no lack of it. We believe that there is a lack of something. If something is only a little bit of it, so first of all, it must be very expensive, and I don't deserve it, or whatever it is. And I'm telling you, that feeling that you are after, that freedom, that happiness, it's there for everyone to enjoy, and it's free. All it takes is your desire to go on that road and explore it.
Tal, what are three things teens can do to begin working on their spirituality?
First of all, I think that they need to stop and readjust their perspective. Start to ask questions. Don't be afraid of asking questions. And if you can ask questions, then you start to seek the truth. You go on that road. Once you go on that road of looking for the truth, then you are halfway home. You don't need... I struggle with things in my life every day. But I know that one of the profound changes in my life that happened in age 23 is that I felt at home. I knew I'm from now on, when I realized there is a God, there is a purpose, I knew everything would be okay. It doesn't prevent you from struggles in life. It doesn't prevent you from having difficulties. But you know you are on the road. You found the road. You are going home. And this is that profound feeling of things will be okay. There are no words to describe that feeling. So once you're asking questions, start to ask questions. Once you go on that road, you will feel that things will be okay. So it's changing perspective. If until now you thought that they are only what seems to be, what you see in the physical, change your perspective and start to look for other answers and other possibilities. And I think that's the one thing that teens should do, is not being afraid to ask questions and seek the truth.
Interesting.
And then that will take you, that will open doors for you that you don't know yet exist. So more than that, you don't need to know. You need to know that you need the courage to ask the questions and not be afraid of the answers and start to seek them.
How would you advise a teenager who has low self-esteem of not being good enough?
Well, one of the things, changing perspective, is how you change the perspective of who you are. You look at yourself now, Johnny, and you say, I'm a human being, I'm spiritual, I have a soul. I'm telling you, you are not. You are a spiritual being with a physical body. Okay, I'm telling you that your soul has been through that, whatever you are going through right now in your life, difficulties as a teenager, thinking you are not good enough, being insulted. Your soul went through that process many times before, and not as Johnny, but is many different bodies, many different names. And what is required of you right now is to decide how you want to proceed. How do you want to react to the fact that or the other things happening in your life? And once you understand that you are your soul, first of all, you start to ask, what is my soul want here? If my soul was here before, went through that, all of a sudden, Johnny or Tal, we are less important. More mm-hmm. important is my soul, it's your soul. So you change your perspective. And then you realize that if you are your soul, and the soul comes and goes back one day to God, it's a part of God. It's made of the same material God made of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There is no way on earth that you are not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
If your soul is not good enough, you tell me that God is not good enough. That's not possible. So, I'm telling you, you are more than good. You are perfect. Now, mm-hmm. in your body, the soul created for you that situation you are right now, so you can overcome it. Let's find together a way to overcome and move forward. What is it that bothers you? Which one? Because all of us feel that we are not good enough to do A or B. So what is it? And now we overcome that. And that's actually a great, great line that Krishnamurti said once. He mm-hmm. said, it's not a measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. Okay, so he took everything and turned it upside down. So the mm-hmm. fact that you feel inadequate, it's more than normal right now. Okay, so how you come to see that as normal, and how you come to see that there is a way forward and things will be okay. So we will go from there and deal with each problem specifically.
What type of success have you had since you introduced the teachings and your understanding of spirituality to your own children and students? Are they accepting the concept pretty well?
Again, some of them yes, some of them no.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to present. I give you the food. If you like to eat it, eat it. If you don't touch it. No harm, mm-hmm. no foul. But when it is affecting them, it's great because you see really great changes.
Mm-hmm.
You see kids that all of a sudden, and I will give you one example. In one of my classes, came over a Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur, where people mm-hmm. forgive, you know, that we believe that God is forgiving us. And
right.
And I asked the kids, what is it? Who are you forgiving and who is forgiving you? And they all say, my parents and God and my brother and sister and that friend and the other friend. And I said, one name I didn't hear. No one forgive, and no one was forgiven by whom? Until one girl said, by me. I didn't forgive myself. And all those kids all the time say, yeah. You know, they realize. And I say, okay, that will be your first really Yom Kippur. And you will write now, I ask them to write, one event in their life that they mm-hmm. are unable to forgive themselves. And then after writing that, feel what you feel right now of that event, how it makes you feel, then write down, I told them, write down, I forgive myself, and then tear the paper to small pieces and throw it away. And that's the end of story. And you mm-hmm. don't have to share it with class because I want you really to be genuine with yourself. And
right.
3-4 minutes into the activity, one of the girls just jumped and started mm-hmm. laughing hysterically. And so I have to share it with the class and say, look, it's personal, it's private, you don't have to. She insisted. She insisted. And,
yeah.
and after everyone finished, I said, all right, now please share with us.
Yeah.
And she said, 2 years ago, she did something so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't sleep at night. For two years, she didn't sleep at night. She would wake up every night with remorse, with nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
And as she wrote down what she did and then forgave herself, all of a sudden, it just came to her that what she did was so, it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so insignificant that everything, all the energy, all the tension just was released in that instant. And she felt, and she couldn't stop laughing hysterically. And she ran to her father to tell her, to tell him. And they went mm-hmm. to the principal to tell. One of the questions I asked her, I said, now when you can, I asked her, does anyone, would anyone would be able to punish you worse than what you were punishing yourself with all that?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, I punished myself. It's worse than anything else. And I said, now when when you forgive yourself, can you forgive others? And she laughed. She said, easily, I can forgive everyone. You know, and so that's one instance how in a class, kids can learn to really to forgive themselves. And there are many other examples of, you know, smaller and bigger things than that. But that's what I want to take. And I didn't know where it's going to take. It was the first time I did that activity. I didn't know where it's going. And so I was surprised and I was happy after. I said, hey, you know, if you can help one person, that's good enough.
When you talk about spirituality, it touches each individual differently because everyone has their own flight plan, so to speak. So we have no idea. What you mentioned, which is very important, you are there, you give them the basic fundamentals, and it's up to them to apply it to themselves based on what they need and don't need and so forth. How has parents taken your concept in terms of, are they pretty much supportive of what your teachings and so forth?
I had one mother at the end of the year, I had twins, and I'm teaching a sixth grade, so they are 12 years old, and the mother, she had twins, and they just staring at the walls when I talk about spirituality. And she came to me, it was important to her to come to me at the end of the year and said, look, I know that they pretend not to be interested, but when we sit in the car, and I ask them, I drive them home and ask them, what did you learn today? They tell me everything you said. So they are listening. So it was important to her to come and tell me that. Now, I assume that parents are like kids. You know, some of them, they're really happy. Some of them say, well, I'm not sure. So I'm trying to balance. You know, I'm not teaching only spirituality, so I'm trying to balance what I do in class. But it actually affects adults too. I mean, I had one when the book, before it went on sale, I got a few copies and I gave it to a co-worker, to one of the teachers there. And she came to me a few weeks later. We sat together and all of a sudden from nowhere she said, you know what, your book, among other things, saved my marriage. And I said, wow, how that happened? And she said, look, I read it. And I realized that I have to let go of my anger. And she said, I let go of my anger, of my resentment to my husband and everything that's going on right now in the family. And I'm rebuilding. And it's great. It's not perfect. But, you know, and I told her that I hope to get many reactions like that. But she will always be my first, you know. That I mean, and that's the beauty of writing, because you don't know where, like you said, it will take the reader wherever it should. And in her case, help her to save her marriage.
Beautiful story, beautiful story. Now that all of them are on the road to spiritual understanding, what are some possible road hazards can one expect to run into?
Well, the first thing you need to be aware of is when you go on you really discover something new. It's so wonderful that you tend to overlook your physical existence. As a teenager, you might think that school is not important anymore, that your body is not important anymore, that why I need to keep it clean, why I need to keep it to dress, why. It's my soul that it's important. But your soul put you in a place where you live in the physical body for a reason. So you need to be aware to keep that balance between your road inside, into your soul, into God, and the road outside, which is school, friends, family, later on work. If you can find the balance between those two roads, you are in a good place. So that's the first thing to be aware of. And not, I would say that's the most important thing to be aware of. And secondly, know that the fact that you are taking this road, it's not a guarantee that bad things will not happen to you. But it would give you that foundation that you need. If you go inside, you explore inside, and you build strong foundation based on your soul's needs and your connection with the higher power we call God, you will be able to overcome those stumbles on the road, those hazards that you will run across, because things around you would keep happening the same way they happen right now. It's just that you will be able to deal with them differently. You will not look at things that happen to you as good and bad anymore, but as experience that for one reason or another you are experiencing, and okay, how should I deal with it? It's more about how you react to things. Right now, it's what happened to me. Why it happened to me, why it happened this way, why she left me, why I got a bad grade. It's why things happened to me. On that road, it's more, okay, how do I deal? That happened to me right now. How do I deal? How do I react? And how do I create new realities?
Very interesting. So what kind of road assistance do you offer them? And the reason why I'm bringing all this up, I'm using this analogy because I love the way you did it in your book, because you get on this road and these are the possible hazards that you need to look at, and then these are the assistance that you can look forward to and so forth. So I let you tell the story.
Yeah, the first assistant, and again, because it's based on what I experienced and what I saw, some of it it's I experienced personally, some of it it's I saw around me. Mm-hmm. But the first assistant is this book, is for you to know that you are not alone. You are not alone, and for me the biggest change in life, I mean, going through from the point of not believing in anything to understanding that it's a greater reality, that I don't need to understand everything that is happening around me, but I need to learn to accept. And I know I'm not alone. I know that there are many who go on that road or similar roads, and we are all connected to that force of the universe. So if I can tell you that you're not alone and you can accept it, because as a teenager you feel that nobody understands you, you are confused, and especially your parents don't understand you, and sometimes good friends do bad things to you, and then you really become devastated. So the first assistant is to know that you're not alone and there is a reason for everything. Things happen for a reason. So that's the first. And then to be just an open, I like, although I need to talk, you know, you ask me question and I need to answer, but I like much more to listen than to talk. And it happens with my own kids, it happens with students, and it happens with parents and friends. If you can find someone who just listen to you, that's another assistant. Find a good friend. Find a teacher. Find someone that without judging you, would listen to what you go through and maybe will give you a good advice. And maybe not. Maybe just listen. That's how I see my role. When people send me emails with a question, how can, you know, with a problem, with whatever it is, I try not, because like you said, each soul is on a different path here. So maybe my answer is good for me, would not be there perfectly for you. So
right.
I always leave that door open for you to explore. I like to give kind of general guidance, but not to go into specific, because if I go really into specifics, then I would lose 99% of my audience.
Very true. What's interesting also, Tao, is that what you and I talk about, you know, of course I talk about power of unconditional love, and you talk about pretty much the same thing from a unique perspective for teens. We speak a universal language. It doesn't matter whether you're in California or you're in Israel, or for that matter, you know, whether you're in Cairo. Everybody has the same questions within themselves as a teenager, and every parent has the same challenge. And so when you take all those things out and just take the core values, one of the things that you talk about in your book is ego. Sometimes it could be our greatest enemy, so to speak. And once we take all of that out of the way and we're willing to listen, and you mentioned that just now, sometimes we learn a whole lot more. Not sometimes, most of the time we learn a whole lot more by just listening.
Well, Winston Churchill, which I'm as a history teacher, I always like to read about interesting people. He said once that he always liked to learn, but he's not always like to be taught. And so that's a challenge. How do you stay open to to learning, to get a new ideas, without that feeling that, okay, this guy is preaching to me, or this guy is doing this, or I don't want to be told that I'm wrong on this or the other. So it's a very fine line, and as a teacher, one of the things that a teacher and a parent understand or should understand quickly is that you are not looking to find to get the results. I'm as a teacher, I'm not, you know, my job is not to see the results at the end of the class or at the end of the year. If my students, when they are turning 18, 20, when they start their life, whenever it will be, my kids, the same thing. If they would take something of what I taught to them with them to the road, to their own experience, that's good enough for me. I don't need my students, all of them, to finish the year and to tell me that they became spiritual. That's not my that's not my intention. So as a student, as a teenager, you need to find, you know, your pace. If it's too fast for you, slow down. It's too slow for you, pick up the speed. You call the shots.
Right. If you have life is not a candy store for yourself when you were a teenager, would things have been different back then for you?
Yes. And by the way, one of the again, because of my personal experience, my older brother was always more spiritual. And so I until today, I said it in the book, in the, you know, the acknowledgments, he left for me that door open, because when nobody cared about that stuff as teenagers, he was always interested in exploring more. And and he could not, so he left for me the door open, so I will find it when I was 23. So but I didn't have that, I don't know, that desire to look for it. But if I will have it today, all over again, and I would, I would have the book with me, it would help me to understand, because as a teenager, because I was a struggling student, so I felt uneducated in school, but I was good in a sport, and I partying and all that stuff. I just ran from one event to another, and from one girlfriend to another, and looking for something that was not there. And so today, reading that book, I say, all right, maybe it's not outside. Maybe I do need to look inside. Maybe I need to find friends with a common interest of exploring that side of life. So it would, today as a teenager, holding a life is not a candy store, I believe it would help me to just slow down, take the time to ask the question, have the courage to say no to the next party, to say no to the next cigarette or next beer or whatever it is, and look for something else.
Very interesting. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, I have my website, which is www.talyanai.com. One word, and it's .com, where they can get the book and read more about me. And they also can get the book, of course, on Amazon and other websites like Amazon. But I also have my blog, which it's called Road Signs, where I write and share my thoughts. I'm trying to do it four or five times a month, to bring a subject that I came across and find it can be helpful.
How has writing the book impacted you personally?
Well, the biggest impact is that I really feel that I'm right now on my, that I live my soul purpose, not my mind purpose. Because when you, the daily activity, when you gain, you think about what I gained today, what I lost, who told me where to go and who told me what to do, it's all about at what we talked about, the ego, although the ego is important and it has an important role, but when we always count in what happened to us and how much money we have, we live on the mind level. It's the mind that tells us what we are good enough or not good enough. When you go and you start to live on your soul purpose, you try to figure out what is the soul wants for me. And that's how I got to the book, and that's what I'm doing today. When I do the two things that I like. I like to teach, and I like spirituality. And having the courage to write the book and then publish it, and because by nature I'm a shy guy, so it's not easy for me to go on a show like yours and open up and speak about my life or even speak. But I do it with that love, knowing that I live my soul purpose. So that's the biggest change that the book, and it's all on the professional level. It's really when you sit down and you write down what you have in your head for 18 years, all of a sudden you realize that it's one big mess and you need to organize it. And it's a long process. Editing books, it's a long process. So it really helped me to shape and sharpen my thought.
I think we're all on the journey, still on the journey.
And that's the fun of it. I mean, being on the journey, it's why we are here.
Right.
Even the Buddha said that it's more important to travel well than to arrive.
Right.
So the idea of life is not a candy store, is to find a way to travel well. It's not so much once you travel well. When you start, all you want is to come to the... I said it's so painful sometimes, daily existence, that all you want is to end it by getting to God, by all that. And it's there. It's at the end of the journey. But as you go on the journey and you start to experience things, all of a sudden, when the journey would end, it's less important. More important is to experience and to enjoy the journey.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, the first thing I just mentioned is find out your soul purpose. Live your soul, what your soul is telling you to go after, to experience. So go elevate yourself to a soul level, not the mind level. And then also be... From there, you will find the inner power to actually be grateful for what you have. Because when you say thank you get up in the morning and you say thank you for getting up in the morning. Or something good happens to you and you say, God, thank you. And you stop taking things for granted and you become a much happier person. Just by saying thank you realize how much you have. And look for those moments of happiness. Many times when we come across those moments of happiness, we feel that we don't deserve them. Or if we are happy, we say, well, don't be too happy because tomorrow something bad would happen. Enjoy those moments of happiness, true happiness. Enjoy them all the way. And don't worry about what's going to happen tomorrow. If you live the moment, you can really enjoy what's in your life. And just be aware, observe. Be conscious to your action. Just observe from the side as you would sit in a theater and observe. You know, just observe what you're doing, what others are doing. Less about others, more about you. How do you feel? Don't judge it. Just observe it. And that will help you to understand better where you come from and where you're going.
That's fantastic. Once again, Tal, give us your information with regards to where can someone get your book and follow what you're doing.
Again, it's talyanai.com, which is talyanai.com, and they can buy the book there. They can. I also recommend some other books there because part of the journey is really to find, and I could give you the list of many, many good books that I came across, and I'm happy to share them with you. And that's on my website. It's actually recommendations for some of those, because I read many, many good books. I put some of them that really influenced me more than others. So they can go to talianai.com.
And you also have a blog, right?
Right. It's road signs. And, well, when you Google road signs, it will take you to many road signs. you will go and see road signs from Australia. And but if you put both Tali and I and road signs, it will take you to my blog.
Fantastic. Now, what is the most important lesson in life you have learned?
Well, I would say that my 23 years, the first 23 years, mm-hmm. of living without the outside the reality of the existing of higher power, mm-hmm. that's the most painful and important lesson I learned in life. It's a lesson that you cannot pay me enough money today to go back to be the most successful secular person on earth. I just don't want to experience that anymore. So that's actually that love to life, that love mm-hmm. to God. And you see it in the book, that there is no pressure on you as the reader, that if you will not do that and that bad, you know, you're mm-hmm. going to hear or bad things will happen to you. No, it's take your time. I just want you to know that if you are not, you are missing something wonderful. So that my most important lesson in life.
Fantastic. Tal, thank you for giving us a great recipe for living just now and also for sharing all your thoughts about this wonderful thing about spirituality for teenagers. And thank you so much for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Clayton Paul Thomas. He is the author of Tantrums, Troubles, and Treasures, a parenting guide to parent in the 21st century. Clayton and I will be discussing about his parenting journey and his new book. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Tal, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you, Johnny. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.